Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show. This is the Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. I'm your host, pop art painter Jamie Rocks, and this is the big show. You found it? I sure am glad you did. I am very excited. It's a Friday today, and our guest today has made a fantastic, fantastic documentary. I watched this about a week ago, and I rewatched it last night. It's one of those you're going to want to watch a couple times. It's just fascinating, fascinating. The name of the documentary is Rom Boys, and the filmmaker, our guest today, is Mr. Matt Harris. Matt, how are you?
Yeah, good, good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man, absolutely. Now, one of the things, when I sat down to watch this, I was thinking about back to my own youth. I'm an old man now, but, you know, that wasn't always the case. And I grew up in Metro Detroit, and I knew some people. I had some friends that were into the skateboard scene, you know, the skate scene. I couldn't remember if we had any, like, official parks or anything around. I think they just skated wherever they could, you know. But one of the things that I really liked about your documentary, your film, is, and this is what I remember with my friends, it didn't matter. They were, like, almost, I don't want to say a gang in the negative context of that, but they were a club, a clique. They were a group of guys. I think was one gal that memory serves. And, yeah, there was, now that I think about it. Anyway, they were a group of people. And it did class, money, race, any of that stuff did not matter. You know, if you were into skating, you were cool. You know, you were included in that group. And here is, I'm watching this documentary, and the same thing is going on even more so than in my area. They're in London. It's amazing. You know, I guess kids are going to do what they're going to do. And not just kids, but all kinds of people, you know. Were you a skater growing up?
Yeah, I kind of, I mean, I'm an old man as well now. And
I don't know how it happens, I mean, man. It just happens, you know?
I mean, I got my first board in 1977. So that,
wow.
And I remember it cost me £7 that I paid in like penny coins. And so, yeah, I did it as a kid for a bit. And then, and then I guess the early 80s, I kind of did it a little bit. And then BMX, I did that as well. So, yeah, I did
it.
I mean, I was pretty rubbish. I was pretty rubbish at both of them, but I did. I had a go, you know.
Well, one of the great things that I like about the skateboarding scene, any of that scene, the BMX scene, any of that, is now that I'm an old man and can look at these things, you know, with a certain perspective, I mean, I didn't realize this when I was a kid and whatnot, but one of the great things about it is it teaches a valuable life lesson. You will fall. You will hurt your life. The ground will kick your tail. But you get up and you learn from it and you go again. You know what I mean? You keep going. And I got to tell you that is true life. I don't know. I mean,
yeah.
I imagine anywhere in the world, you know, you just got to keep going. There is nothing quite like that feeling of smashing down on a BMX bike. Oh, baby, that ain't fun at all.
Yeah, I think it's Lance in that Lance Mountain in the film where he said it kind of teaches kids that you fall down and you get back up again. You know,
right? Absolutely,
and
absolutely. Well, let me ask you this. Now, here you are. You've made this documentary, and I was reading some of the production notes on it and whatnot, and it says that this was a four-year production time, and I'm not in the movie business. I'm just a civilian, but is that like having the idea of making this movie to where you are now, like a week, a couple days, or a week pre-release? That's a four-year
journey?
It's about,
it's really probably 5 years, actually, from the idea. It's 20, I'd say, it's ridiculous. I mean, I took my daughter there in 2015 to this park on a Sunday that I used to go to as a kid in the summer, and I just thought, yeah, I wonder if it's still open. And I went, and it was still open. And there were no kids there, you know. It was just all full of these old guys in their late 40s and 50s
really?
Skateboarding. And I thought, this is strange, you know. These, I had no idea that there was even a scene of old bloke skateboarders.
Right.
And no kids. And I'm like, this is weird, right? So then I got talking to them, and they were like really friendly bunch. And I kind of went back a couple more Sundays with my daughter. And then talking, you know, I found out that this place was listed. It had this heritage status. And then I kind of went away, and I thought, hang on, this is like, there has to be a story. There's got to be something about this. Like, I didn't know anything about this. And so it just kind of went from there, really. And I thought, oh, yeah, I'll make a film 6 months, a year, you know, it will be done. And it took 5 years. Just because of the story. I couldn't find the story. You know, these characters are great. And it was really good to film. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, this isn't going anywhere, you know. So yeah, it was a nightmare.
Well, one of the great things that I liked about this film is the park itself. And I don't know if this was intended. Again, I'm not in the movie business, but I watch a lot of movies. I'm definitely a movie fan. And the park itself is a character. You know, it's the main character of this film. And man, I don't know what kind of camera you were using, but it was phenomenal. I mean, this was shot just amazing, you know? I mean, it looked like, I mean, full-on production, you know? I mean, I'm watching this, I'm going, man, they shot this. They must have been on, like, on a rail camera with, you know, on train rails or something, you know, or a boom, or I don't know. I was just very impressed. Very impressed.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good. That's really nice to know. I mean, I shot it on a Sony FS7, which is, you know, like, it's a good camera. It's not a Red. It's not an Arri Alexa. You know, it's a kind of $7,000-$8,000 camera. But then I had a drone. The drone I use quite a bit. You know, you see the big drone shots that you really get a sense of the place. And a bit of a stabilizer stuff. But yeah, it was just a lot of slow motion and. Yeah, I tried to make it look. I'm glad you said that, because I really tried to make it look cinematic, you know.
Yeah, and it did. It really kind of came across that way. This did not look like somebody, you know, went out on a weekend with their camera phone or whatever and shot this. This looked, you know, right here, right now.
Yeah.
Serious stuff, you know.
Matt,
I was watching this and I'm like imagining. I'm like, well, they must have had one of those guys with one of those little clacker things, you know, scene, blah, 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 and clack, action, you know, and Matt sitting there with a bullhorn and looking through a lens.
No.
I don't know if all that
me.
Was going on, but
it was me. I did it. I shot it. I directed it. I did the sound. You pulled my hair out.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was just, like you said, it was kind of every weekend, just kept going and going and going and just shooting and, you know, hours and hours and hours of footage. Yeah, and the edit was horrible, but.
No, I bet it was. I can only imagine. Now, is that typical of shooting a documentary to shoot so much extra? I mean, it's not intended to be extra because you don't know, right? So you just shoot all this and then you kind of have to sift through it. For all the gold, right? And then put that together? Is that normally how that goes?
I mean, the interviews, you know, I kind of shot, there's about 30 interviews that I shot, and then there was one of the guys that I interview in the film, actually, he tried to do the same thing 15 years ago, so he shot loads of the archive stuff that you see. That's how I could kind of cut back from the guys today to how they were 15 years ago, because he tried to do the same thing.
That's basically awesome.
I just kind of got the interviews, 30 interviews, and then pieced that together with all the action kind of shots that I've done over 4 years. And to see how it would all fit together, really. And then with his with all this archive stuff, like the, you know, the crash sequence, the sequence with all the crashes. I mean, that's probably my favourite bit in the film to edit, because it was fun.
No. Because you're not going in. You're not. It's not happening to you.
No, that's amazing.
Man. That is amazing. No, I don't know your situation, Matt. If you're married or you know what's going on. You mentioned you have a daughter. So you're talking about a 4-year project, really 5-year, like you were saying. Now, I mean, I love my wife. I don't know, and I think she loves me, but I don't know if I could sell her on that. You know, like, okay, I'm doing this, and it's going to be 4 or 5 years. I think she'd be like, okay, Picasso, time for you to start delivering pizzas or something, you know. But it worked. I mean, 4 years, that's a long time. You know, that's 4 graves for your daughter. You know, I mean,
I mean, it started out not being full time. It was kind of weekend filming, and I'd sort of take the odd day off here and there to go and shoot an interview. But then as it got kind of towards the end of it, it started to consume me a lot more. I mean, I kind of got away with it by taking my daughter every Sunday. So it was like, yeah, I'm just going out. I'm taking Emma out, you know. We're going to go to the park to play, and we go to the skate park, and I just happen to have all my camera gear in the back of the car. So that kind of got me off the hook there. Towards the end when it was all kind of coming together, and, you know, the big event that happened that kind of switched the story around, then it sort of started eating into the day job a lot.
I hear you. And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
This is a message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Older adults and people of any age who have serious underlying medical conditions are at higher risk for severe illness from COVID-19. If you are at higher risk, you should stay home as much as possible and avoid close contact with people who are sick to protect yourself. Call your doctor if you have concerns about COVID-19 and your medical condition, or if you get sick. For more information, visit cdc.gov.
Metal Babe Mayhem is super excited about their newest venture with MBM Music LLC. With MBM Music, we'll provide artists with a full-service platform to be seen and heard by assisting with necessary products, services, and fashion, all in an effort to increase exposure, fan base, and income. For more information, visit us at mbmmusicllc.com. That's mbmmusicllc.com. You create, we promote, plug in to the network.
Glittering amethyst, energizing citrine, colorful fluorite, the other side of the sun, Earth's treasures brought to light. Since 1999, we have offered a unique collection of hand-selected minerals and gems for every budget, for novices, collectors, and healers. Visit www.tosots.com to view our wide selection of offerings and use coupon code ROCKS, that's ROXX, for 10% off your first order. Remember, TOSOTS.com, Earth's treasures brought to light.
Hi folks, Jamie Rocks here. Hey, if you're a big fan of cool historical books, like me, then you're going to want to check out our newest show sponsor, Michelle Albion, a fantastic author. She's got some really interesting, cool books out that you're going to want to check out. I'm a big fan of all of these. The Florida Life of Thomas Edison, The Quotable Edison, Quotable Henry Ford, Quotable Eleanor Roosevelt, and of course, The Quotable Amelia Earhart. Michelle's just very keen and very, very cool, and these are just very cool books. So check out her website. There's links to where you can pick these up on Amazon and Barnes & Noble all over the place. MichelleAlbion.com, MichelleAlbion.com, MichelleAlbion.com. Very, very cool stuff. Check it out, folks.
And I don't want to give anything away because I want people to see it, but it does. There is a twist. It pivots, I guess is the term to use. The story pivots. Something very important happens, and it changes it. And it's at this point, though, I was totally drawn in. First time I watched it, I was like, oh, okay, well, what's going to happen here, you know? And I was very entertained. I really, really enjoyed watching this. Now, I wanted to ask you, too, you're winning all kinds of awards with this. That's got to be wicked cool, you know? I mean, you worked your tail off on this for a long time, and everybody's digging what you've done. How cool is that?
It's really cool. I'm kind of after, you know, after all this time, I'm kind of so, I've seen it so many times in the edit and, you know, 4 years, almost a bit kind of detached from it now. That I mean, I went last week. We had the Paris Surf and Skate Film Festival where they've been hassling me for 4 years. They'd seen the making of it going on, and then is it ready every year for 4 years. So finally, we kind of showed it there, and I went over, and I kind of got the chance, you know, because all the cinemas they're not in a good state here with the whole COVID thing. So it's great to see it on a big screen with a big sound system and an audience, even though I've got masks on. But yeah, I kind of felt detached from it. I was always watching it and thinking, God, did I make this? You know, it's like, it's very strange. It's very strange, you know. But Parisians, man, they liked it. So I figured, well, I came away and I thought, well, if Parisians, who are pretty grumpy, if they liked it, then maybe it'll do all right, you know?
I think it's going to do fantastic. I'm amazed. And, you know, hanging out in Paris ain't bad either. You know, that's not a bad thing. It does suck with the COVID stuff and everything. And, you know, but at the same time, I'll tell you, you've released an independent film, or it's coming in a week, you know, to be released. And the 13th, right? It's the official drop date of it. So that's, I mean, today's the 2nd. That's coming up, man. But the thing is everybody on the planet now knows how to work a Roku, and they know how to, even senior citizens like me, we figured it out. So people will be watching this, you know. I mean, everybody's a streaming master now, so I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's funny as well because there's a handful of the locals at the park that are in the film that have seen it. You know, we've had private screenings around houses, around my house, and around other people's houses, so they've all kind of seen it. But there's a much bigger crowd of, you know, 40 years of these skaters and BMXers that used to go to the place that are on social media saying, we really want to see it, we really want to see it. And with all the cinemas closed, and we were like, oh, what can we do? But one of the guys, a guy called Spencer, who's actually in the film at the end, he said, well, look, let's do a drive-in. We'll do a drive-in at the park. So they've spent the last kind of week clearing a big car parking space. We've got a big an outdoor theatre company coming in on the 10th, which is next Saturday. So we're actually going to do a UK premiere as a drive-in at the park, which we think is like no one has ever done a UK premiere as a drive-in ever, you know?
So, I don't think so.
And then 3 days later, it's on streaming. No. So and then 3 days later,
that's
it's on
amazing.
Streaming. So all the locals. Yeah, it's going to be, I mean, I've never been to a drive-in ever. So
really?
You know, to kind of go, and it's a film I've made at the skate park where it's made. It's going to be pretty cool, I think.
I think that's really cool. That is amazing. That is amazing. Now, this is, you're working with 1091 Films for distribution on this. Let me ask you this. Now, you made, let me take you back in time a little bit. You've made this film and everything. You know it's pretty good and whatnot. And then how is that dealing with shopping, as they say in your world, shopping it to distributors? Was that a crazy process, or did it go pretty smoothly?
It was, I had no idea about it. I mean, that's the one good thing that's come out of this whole COVID thing, that kind of, I finished it on the 20th of February. It was kind of you know, picture locked and edited and sound mixed and ready to go. And so 20th of February, it sort of sat there. And then a few days later, we had this kind of lockdown, you know, the UK went into lockdown for the last three or four months. So I literally just kind of went online and just tried to figure out the distribution world. And I went on forums and spoke to people. And I just, I had no idea how kind of cutthroat and ruthless and horrible that whole world is. I mean, it's just some of the stories of people taking your film and selling it for 5 years and then not giving you a penny. And so I'm like, oh, God, if I'd have known this 5 years ago, I would probably never have started. But in the end, there's one of the guys in the film, actually, Adam, he was kind of in charge of all the street art section of the film. He got those guys in, but he has a friend who's a producer that lives in Dubai, and he kind of works on big documentary, independent documentaries. And so we did a Zoom call, and he saw the film, and he said it's great, and he put me on to one of the execs at 1091. He said, look, I've worked with this guy for 12 years. They're straight down the line. They're not going to screw you over. And so we talked, and then we kind of did a deal. And to me, like, you know, it was having that kind of reference and that, you know, that someone saying, look, these guys are trustworthy, and I wanted that, you know. I got some offers. I got offers like I submitted to some festivals in the States, some film festivals like just before the COVID thing, and then I didn't get into them. But strangely enough, like within a few days after that, I had phone calls and from distributors say, oh, we want it, we'll buy it. And I kind of Googled them, hadn't recognized anything that these guys had done. And I just didn't feel right, you know. I just kind of like, you know, it's kind
that's
of like,
important.
You've got a baby. Yeah, it's like, you know, I feel like I've got this baby that's going out in the world and I want, you know, good foster parents for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And your name's on it, you know, and you worked hard on this. This is 5 years of your life, man. This is 5 years of your life. You know,
Don't keep reminding me.
Yeah, but no, I mean, I would be definitely. And it's very important. And the reason I'm so glad you brought this up, because I know that people that listen to the show, you know, they want to be doing what you're doing. They're like, oh, yeah, I want to be a filmmaker, you know. And especially, I mean, I don't know how it is in England, but I know here in the States, everybody kind of has this, there's this mythology of, you know, you're like Quentin Tarantino. You're working at the video store, and then all of a sudden somebody, you know, notices you and says, here's a check, go make your masterpiece. And I've never heard of that happening in real life, you know, at least with the people I know. And I have heard, like you, many, many times of people getting messed over. And the common denominator always in every story is they didn't do their due diligence. They didn't have that where somebody said, hey, I've worked with this person. You know what I mean? Somebody of note in that business. So important to check things out, man.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, if my, you know, this friend Adam, if he hadn't have sort of introduced me to this Barry and we had that conversation. Yeah, I don't know what I would have done, to be honest. I probably would have signed a really bad deal with someone, because the whole self-distribution route that a lot of people are kind of pushing is so much work.
And it's hard, you know.
Yeah,
you can upload to Amazon and things like that, but the problem is so can a billion other people, and it gets the water is really muddy, you know. Nobody sees what you've done. And then you got to go do all these podcasts and stuff. You know, I mean, it's a lot of work. A lot of phone calls.
This is a good bit. This is a good bit now. I've done a couple, like, in L.A. I've got, you know, like you today in Miami, and I did L.A. the other day. But this is the fun stuff. It's all the other, the PR side of it is cool. I like that. It's all the paperwork. It's all the legal contracts. Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. You know, and it's just that way. I'm telling you, that's, in my world, I'm a painter by trade, and in my world, it's you know, licensing. Nobody ever emails me and says, you know, hey, I want to get into painting. You know, I'm really itching to fill out a bunch of forms for licensing. You know,
yeah.
No one ever. They're like, oh, I want to talk to famous people and hang out at cool parties. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
But that isn't how it is, man. I'm not flying to Paris, you know, that's... And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Aloha. If you have stress in your life or even anxiety and panic, I want to invite you to the Anxiety Coaches Podcast for a way out. The Anxiety Coaches Podcast is a relaxing and inspiring show bringing you lifestyle changes to calm your nervous system and help you heal. Heal anxiety, panic, and PTSD for life. We bring you 2 episodes every week. There's no need to walk this path alone. Join us for a relaxing, informative, and inspiring time and start your journey out of anxiety panic. That's anxietycoachespodcast.com. Aloha.
Hey there, my name is Paige Beattie, and I am the founder of Hats On and Hats Off, which are 2 separate companies but aligned by the same philosophy of raising cancer awareness and forming smiles. Hats On is a for-profit corporation that sells cancer-specific hats to be proudly worn by you in hopes of raising awareness. A percentage of the proceeds will be donated to Hats Off, which is a nonprofit corporation raising money to buy wigs for cancer patients who can't afford them. That's where we're forming smiles. I believe cancer has touched almost everyone's lives in one way or another, a friend, a family member, a friend of a friend. So please visit our website, www.hatsonhatsoff.com, to learn how you can help raise awareness and form smiles.
Rucks Gear, the online webshop of high-end luxury merchandise and products, all featuring original pop art paintings. From La Jolla to Miami to London, www.merch.jamierucks.us.
Support for this podcast comes from the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, ranked one of the top cancer centers in the nation for the last 27 years. The doctors at MD Anderson treat more rare cancers in a single day than many physicians see in a lifetime. And treatment plans are tailored to an individual patient's needs, allowing more comprehensive and thorough care. To become a patient, please visit makingcancerhistory.com.
Cool.
Did you like the section, the street art guys doing the big mural?
I did, and I was going to say that the people I knew growing up that were into skating, they were also into tagging. That was the big thing. And I remember my friend Brian was really into both of those. And his family, I don't know if you do this in England, but like when you're growing up, his family was going on summer vacation, and they were going to New York City. I had never been to New York. I was like, I don't know, 11 or 12, something like that. And I went with his family, you know, on the vacation. They invited me along, and I went. And I saw graffiti for the first time, street art. I was blown away, you know. I was just like, oh, my gosh. So immediately upon getting back, you know, I absconded with some spray paint and started doing these murals late at night on the local grocery store. And, you know, my father had to sit me down, and he said, you need to change your style up because you painted exactly what's all over your notebooks and everything. You know, it's pretty easy to figure out who did that. That would be my advice. But I was into it. My street art career didn't last very long, but man, it was just brilliant. And you know, in the film there, everybody, And like I said, it's so cool. And these guys are still into it, you know, still into it. And I loved the bit in the trailer too, where it was very quick, but everybody was talking about their, you know, the one guy is saying, you know, oh yeah, I've had 4 knee surgeries and this and that.
Yeah,
and I'm
yeah.
like going, oh man, that's not good at all. But they're into it. That just goes to show their passion, you know?
Yeah,
I try to avoid surgery when I can. That's just my personal take, but hey, each to their own. Each to their own. Well, this is very cool. Now it's coming out. Now, can people pre-order this, or should they just wait till the 13th and buy it then, or rent it then?
Yeah, there's pre-order link is up now. Yeah, you can kind of get it pre-order on Apple and Amazon. And I mean, you guys have got so many more kind of streaming things over there than we have here at the moment. I'm amazed how many different services there are out there.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man. And it's, well, one of the cool things about this film, and I don't know if you know this or not, Matt, but I predict that anybody who is into the whole skate scene or any of that, and not just from a nostalgic point of view, but just even like current stuff, you know, this is going to be one of those films that they're all going to have. It's going to be in everybody's collection. If you're into skateboarding, you're going to have, just like Words of Dogtown, that kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I can see that. And you are going to have, and the skateboard scene, like you said, you got your first board in 77, man. I'm not trying to make anybody feel old or anything. That's a long time for a phase to be going on. You know what I mean? For a trend. That's a long trend.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going anywhere. People dig it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny you say about kind of Dogtown and stuff, because there's never been, I mean, when I started on this, I thought we've never had a film about the British skate scene, you know, there's been, you know, the Dogtown and Z-Boys documentary about the guys that started in California. There's never been anything about the British scene. So that's kind of what I thought, that's why I've got to do this, because it's the first time, you know, that anyone has seen it, really.
Oh, absolutely. And I'll tell you something, Matt. Everybody in the States, I mean, I don't know if you guys know this over there in Britain and England. Everybody here thinks anything English or British is just very, very cool.
yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter what it is. There is a reason that all the villains and all the good movies are always British, you know, in America, just because they're cool, you know? I'm just saying, you know, it's very true. It's very true. And I'm surprised that there hasn't been more of people knowing about the British skate scene, because of course it was happening. I mean, you know. Oh, you guys had a skate park probably before a lot of people here had one.
Yeah, I think, you know, certainly in the whole kind of skate scene, they're well aware of Britain, but probably not. I mean, you know, I talk to people like you, or I talk to people that don't know the skateboarding thing, it's like, yeah, they are amazed, you know, how kind of big it is or was over here. And that's what I wanted to, I didn't want to make a film for the skateboarders and the BMXers, you know, I kind of wanted to make it for a bigger audience to kind of show, you know,
to open
show
it up.
This,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And to show these people that they're real people, you know,
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I have a friend of mine who's a civil engineer, and the company he works for, they make a lot of parks, public parks, you know, cities will give them a bunch of money and they'll design and build these parks. And he said one of the big things that people request, these communities request, are skate parks. They want a skate park, you know. And I was like, well, why do you think that is? And he said, well, it keeps the kids from skating at the mall, you know, or in parking lots and getting hit by cars and stuff. And, but he goes, it's a big thing.
It's like, I mean, Lance Mountain, we interviewed him, you know, he's a big American skater. I mean, he's a huge name in the American skate scene, but he has a connection with England. And so that's why I kind of interviewed him. But he talks about, you know, that skateboarding, it appeals to those kids that aren't into football or baseball or the team sports, and they want some kind of unstructured activity, you know, and it appeals to those kind of kids, you know, the sort of creative kids, if you like. You know, so it is a different kind of, it is a different kind of person, I think, that does it. You know, you spend hours trying to learn a trick and come away bleeding and, you know, covered in scars, and that takes a certain type of person to do that, you know.
Well, and, you know, and it's, and let's face it, it's a universal truth. A lot of gals out there like bad boys, you know. I mean, yes, they'll like a football player, but, you know, yeah. A scar never hurts. That's all I'm saying. In my experience, at least.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, it's a very cool film. I can't wait for everybody to see it. Now, I know it's going to be dropping on the 13th of October. I'm going to remind everybody on all my social media about it when it drops and everything, and I'll be bugging everybody to death about it. And I've got my review that I'm just finishing up. I'll be dropping that.
Oh, nice.
Nice. Yeah. And, it, you know, I want to ask real quick. I know you're pressed for time, but I wanted to ask before I let you go. Now that you've made this, you know, and got that 5 years out of the way, are the wheels turning for the next project?
I've got some ideas. I just need to spend the winter thinking about it, which is what I did on this one. It took me a whole winter, you know. I'm like, I don't know if I could do another 5-year one. I don't think I've got that in me. Maybe a year. I don't know.
Well, you know, Matt, the rave scene's coming back, so maybe you can start going to rave. No, I'm teasing you. I'm kidding. Don't do that.
I used to. Like, that was in the 80s, man. That was huge over here. Oh, I could tell you some stories
too,
about
man.
That.
Me too. Oh, man. Yes. We could swap some stories there. Oh, that was a fun scene. The fashion sucked, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Oh, man. It's funny. I do a monthly house music show with a DJ friend of mine from those times, you know, and she's since gone on and, you know, she does all these big shows and whatnot now. But that's how we met. We met in the field.
Yep. Wow, that's fun. Well, I've got friends that are in bands that were in, you know, big rave bands in the 90s that had top 10 hits over here, and I still speak to them all the time, and I know that world.
Yeah. Oh, man,
I don't remember much.
Sunshine in a band.
I don't remember much. I know if I don't remember much.
That's the problem. I remember it in waves. It's very wavy. Well, that's cool, man. I can feel that bass in my chest. Well, this is cool. ROM Boys. We have links, ladies and gentlemen, to the romboys.film website. That's the official website of ROM Boys. Their Facebook page, their Instagram page, all of that. And it's just amazing. It is just amazing. And I definitely want everybody to check it out and whatnot. Such a cool park. And again, I want to ask you a question about the park, but I don't, because I don't want to mess anything up with the film. Still, you know what? We will talk later about it, because I will message you privately on that. I'm curious. And, you know, let me ask you this. I'll put it this way. Hey, Matt, do you and your daughter still go to the park every so often?
We kind of do a little bit, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. And after everybody sees the film, they'll say, we get what they were saying. Cool, man.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. Well, keep doing what you're doing. Obviously, now this was your first documentary you had written or you had made, right?
Yeah, I do a lot of kind of freelance, director of photography stuff at production companies. I do little short stuff, but yeah, this is the first kind of proper feature length thing. Yeah.
Well, who knew you had that talent in you, Matt? I mean, you know, you got to make more. You're real good at it.
Yeah.
You know?
Thank you.
Yeah, man. That. That's amazing. I was looking at your IMDb page, and I did see you worked on one of the Doctor Who's. That's cool, too.
That was, yeah, that was a fluke, man. That was just like, that was a 5:30 afternoon, Friday afternoon phone call. We found you online, and we need someone to help with this. Can you come and do it? And I was like, do what? And I was, do a shoot on Doctor Who. Oh, yeah, I'll do that. yeah.
Of course. So
it was bizarre. It was a really bizarre day. Yeah. It was the hardest job I've had in 10 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they asked me to. I've got a Ronin, like a stabilizer, a big Ronin II gimbal stabilizer mm-hmm. thing, and this was they only just come out, and I happened to have one, and they'd hired one for a shot, and they didn't know anybody knew how to use it, so they found me online, they got me over, and
nice.
Then they said, oh yeah, we just want to do the longest single one shot in the history of Doctor Who, and you're gonna have to do it first, and I was like, okay. yeah, right. So 12 hours later and about 15 or 30 or 25 takes, I can remember, and a crew of about 100 people, yeah, we kind of
wow.
did it, but it was, oh man, it was stressful. It was like, yeah, it was, yeah, we got it.
But you've got that on your resume now.
Yeah,
cool
yeah,
that?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
that is awesome. Oh man, they're at the end. They're like, "You can't take the TARDIS home. What are you doing?"
Yeah,
I need it.
yeah.
Be cool in the office. Very cool, man. Well, hey, thank you so much, man. I know I kept you longer than I was supposed to. I apologize about
That's
that.
Good.
But you're fascinating
That's
to talk
That's
to.
Good. That's
and,
good.
And man, just final question: you, everybody in your people, your family, and everybody's healthy and safe and. Doing okay over
yeah.
there?
Yeah, we're all good. Yeah. I'm in quarantine because I went to Paris and I had to sit at home for 14 days before I can go anywhere, which is fine because that's all I've done for the last 5 years, editing anyway, so nothing changes.
I hear you, man. I hear you. Well, keep making these and let's stay right in touch because I can't wait till this drops and everybody sees it. I know everybody's
yeah.
going to love it. This is a fantastic film.
Brilliant. All right. Thanks a lot. Thanks for that.
Absolutely, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Cheers, Jamie. See you, mate.
See you later. Well, there you go, folks. How about that? Mr. Matt Harris, filmmaker extraordinaire, and, you know, Romboys. This is a fantastic documentary. I know I've said it about 100 times during the last half hour or so, but it's very true. You got to check this out. I will be reminding everybody. Today's episode, of course, this is episode 1029. I have no idea how we did that many, but I'm glad we did. This will be dropping as a podcast and pushed out on all the various social media platforms here in about an hour. Hopefully. It all depends on how fast that New York City computer is going. So, and we all know how New York City computers can be. No, should be about an hour. Of course, we're on the all the podcasting platforms as well. The big ones, of course, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Podcasts. We're on them all, man. And this will be, like I said, about an hour. It'll be up, and you can listen to it again and again and again. How about that? Very, very cool. I am off tomorrow, but then we have a special show this Sunday. We will be back. Our show Tuesday, we had some technical issues with the servers. Again, that New York City computer. Remember, you thought I was joking. But anyway, we had an issue Tuesday, so we rescheduled the Tuesday show to this Sunday. And so we'll be knocking that out this Sunday. So there you go. Everybody, be safe. Be cool. Hey, yeah, be cool, man. If you were going out, you know, shopping or doing whatever you got to do, man, when you go out, be nice to the people that are working out there. Give them a smile. They can see it in your eyes when you do. I know you'll be wearing your mask and everything. Appreciate that. But just be nice to them. Don't give them any grief. They've been hearing stuff all day from everybody. They've been at work all day and, wearing that mask as well. So just be cool. And, together, hopefully we can all get past this all the more sooner. Very cool. Okay, we are out of here. See you next time, everybody. Bye.
This has been pop art painter Jamie Rocks's Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. It has been executive produced by Jamie Rocks, recorded at his studio in Deerfield Beach in South Florida. All rights reserved by Pop Rocks Limited for broadcast on Blog Talk Radio.
Tana Oli, Pop Rocks Radio.
Estás escuchando Jamie Rocks de Pop Rocks Radio. Manténganse al tanto.
Hej, det här är Hicks från Sverige och ni lyssnar till Pop Rocks Radio med Jamie Rocks.
Blog Talk Radio.